Welcome to Aware on the Air, a podcast project connected to the Rocky Mountain Center for Counseling and Stress Reduction. Aware on the Air's mission and intention is to share the wisdom and information of leaders in the field of mindfulness, parenthood, stress reduction, health, and wellness. Today we will be speaking with Lisa Dion, psychotherapist and registered play therapy supervisor. She's an international teacher, clinical supervisor, and entrepreneur. Lisa is the director of the Play Therapy Institute of Colorado, an affordable counseling site for children and families, and a training site for therapists from all around the world. She is also the creator of Synergistic Play Therapy, where she bridges the gap between play therapy and biology. In this interview with Lisa today, you will learn a new way of thinking about a child's moods based on perception and biology. You will also gain a greater understanding of how to proactively support a child's ability to manage their moods by helping them regulate their nervous system. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Erin.
Thank you for being here today and taking this time to speak about this subject.
Great.
I'm curious what interests you about the subject and what is drawing you to speak about it today.
Yep. So on a personal level, in addition to being a play therapist and working with so many kids, I'm also a mom of a six-year-old mm-hmm. who has been my greatest teacher. So I get the opportunity every day to look at moods, hers and my own, and also every day to work with other kids and their moods. And I've just come to understand a few things about moods that I'd love to share with other parents out there, because a lot of the parenting information that's out there is really geared towards behavior and behavior modification. So the child is exhibiting a certain symptom, let's say they're hitting a lot, or they're really shy and reserved, for example, and there's a lot of information out there about what to do to change the behavior. And there's not a lot out there really talking about what might be going on underneath the behavior, because I really believe that when parents are able to understand what's happening underneath the child's symptoms, it really empowers the parents to be really creative in their parenting, and it also helps them create more of a long-term outcome, have a long-term result, rather than just let me implement a strategy and get a quick fix mm-hmm. and have the behavior stop, which then may just result in a new behavior popping up right around the corner. Chasing behaviors is often something that I see parents doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and I really would love to share with parents just another perspective, another way of looking at what's going on with their kiddos' moods and empower them. Mm-hmm.
Yes, parents can get to a desperate place where they seek out different plans, theories, therapists, and I'm very just curious how yours is different.
Well, I'd love to share. So, as you mentioned, what I want to talk about is a new way of thinking about children's moods. And I want to approach it from the perspective of biology and the nervous system. So as I begin to talk about this, I want to lay down a little bit of a foundation first, because parents, there's probably different levels of familiarity with how the brain works and how the nervous system works. So I just want us all to start from the same.
Give us a 101.
A 101. Mm-hmm. Brain 101. Mm-hmm. How we take in information 101. So basically, as we walk through the world, we are taking in, bombarded really, by a fairly large amount of sensory data every single second. There's a lot of research out there, a lot of debates about how much data exactly, but one of the recent ones that I read was 2 billion bits of sensory data every single second. So what that means is, as I'm walking along, I'm taking in information such as this, registering sounds and different colors and how the air feels on my arms and how things taste in my mouth. That's all sensory data. I'm also taking internal sensory data. So other information that's going to my brain are things like my heart rate and my body temperature and my hormone levels. So my brain is literally getting bombarded externally and internally with all kinds of information. And somehow our brilliant brains interpret this information, make sense out of it, hopefully, and help guide us through the world. So the way that this works is that the sensory data comes into our brain. It comes into a primitive part of our brain that's located, if you could imagine this, kind of at the back of your head, at the base of your head above your neck. So many people refer to this as the reptilian brain. It's also the seat of the fight or flight response, which many people are familiar with. But in this presentation, I want to expand that out because it's not just a fight or flight response that we have. We actually have a fight, flight, and then we also have a freeze and fall asleep response that for some reason doesn't get talked about very
much. Especially the fall asleep.
Especially the fall asleep part. Yeah. But we do. We get sleepy when things get overwhelming as a strategy to deal with the overwhelm.
To cope.
To cope, exactly. It's a brilliant design of the brain. So that information comes into the reptilian part of our brain, makes its way to, I'm going to call it the middle brain so that people are able to visualize this, which is often referred to as your limbic system, the seat of your emotions, if you will. And there's a part of the brain about the size of an almond called the amygdala, which some of you may be familiar with, and if not, this amygdala is a very critical part of why we act the way that we do, because it's the amygdala's task to determine if there's any threat attached to any of that sensory data, the 2 billion bits of sensory data that has just come into the brain.
The external.
And the internal.
And the internal.
Yeah, so that's quite the responsibility of the amygdala. That tiny little almond. Yeah, exactly. And so what it'll do in, you know, a split second, almost like a Rolodex, it will start searching for, have I ever seen this combination of sensory data before? Is there anything about this that feels unfamiliar to me? Mm-hmm. Is there anything about this that has scared me in the past that I, for whatever reason, feel like I need to be on guard or I need to protect myself? Is there anything about this that's overwhelming or is a challenge in any way? If the amygdala determines yes, which parents, here's a really interesting fact about the brain that can be really helpful in understanding your kiddos. The brain functions under guilty until proven innocent. So what that means is that your child will purposely misread cues. Right. Will determine, will err on the side of there's a threat when maybe there isn't a threat. So particularly in little kids, it's a pretty common thought to have, like, why are they overreacting? Or I don't understand why they think I'm yelling. I'm not yelling. Or I don't understand that that's what just set them off.
So this is also related to their developmental age as well.
Absolutely.
I would imagine.
Yes. So two other pieces of information that are helpful to understand. The reptilian part of our brain that I just referred to, the most primitive part of our brain, that's the part of our brain when we're born that has the most wiring in it. So that's the part of the brain that's really getting used frequently. It's the part of our brain that helps us in our arousal states. It regulates sleep. It regulates eating. It's very primitive. It's very reactionary, if you will. The limbic system that I've just talked about, that is the seat of the amygdala, that part has quite a bit of wiring in it when you get to between the age of 2 and 3. So we have a very large part of our brain that's wired by the age 2 or 3. But the piece that I'm not saying, which is important, is that the part of our brain that parents love kids to be in, which is called the frontal cortex, this is the part of the brain where, so this is like your forehead, if you're imagining this. This is the part of the brain that helps us think about our choices and take responsibility for our actions and learn from our quote-unquote mistakes and look ahead and analyze situations and put ourselves in others' shoes where we as parents would love our kids to function from 24 hours a day.
It seems like it would be a long road to get from the back.
It's a long road.
To the front.
In fact, it's 25 years. 25 years. So one of the first things that actually parents can look at just in, from a biological perspective is, do you have unrealistic expectations on your kiddos?
Exactly.
Are you expecting your child to be able to think like you do? Because for us, because that's how we think, we make the assumption, well, why can't my kid think this through? I can think it through.
Yes, it makes me think of my year and a half year old when I say, use your words.
Right.
Use your words. Well, from what you're saying, he doesn't know how to use
his words. He doesn't know how to use his words.
Right.
And it's, he's still developing the synaptic connections and forming that in his.
It comes out as a whine.
It comes out as a whine. Exactly.
Yes.
So, so that's just a really big piece for us to reflect on as parents. From a biological perspective, or do we have unrealistic expectations that we're placing on our kiddos?
That's the first question.
That's the first question. The next piece, going back to how this information is processed. So just want to review again. So information comes in, it goes to your brain stem, your reptilian brain. It makes its way to the middle part of your brain, if you will, the limbic system. The amygdala determines, is there a threat attached or not? And sometimes parents have a hard word with threat. Threat, according to your nervous system, just means challenge. Just something that's
challenge.
Just challenge.
A challenge, which there are many.
There are many.
A little one.
Yes, exactly. And so when we hear the word threat, don't jump to, oh gosh, I'm doing something bad. It could just be a sound that's too loud or a tone of voice that's too loud or a look that the child can't make sense of, or it could be
a balloon popping
or just seeing something and not understanding what it is, whatever that may be, a challenge. The brain can't figure it out. Once that happens, the amygdala sends a response, if you will, back down into the brainstem to activate your nervous system, to do something, to deal with the challenge.
To flee.
To fight, flight, freeze, or fall asleep. So this is where we get into looking at kiddos' moods. So when my fight or flight response is activated, and parents, this is normal. This is how our biology is supposed to work. You're supposed to get activated into a fight or flight response. Or a freeze, fall asleep. Your body is designed to do this. So we don't want to give the nervous system a bad rap. In fact, we want to celebrate it. It's doing its job.
It's a survival mechanism.
It's a survival mechanism.
Yes.
Exactly. So when it gets activated, let me say this a different way. If I perceive that I can do something about the challenge, I'm bigger than it, stronger than it, I'm faster than it, I can scream at it, I can, who knows, I can just take it on. It's that particular perception that activates the fight or flight response.
Okay, that comes first.
That comes first. When I activate that part of my nervous system, these are some of the symptoms that you will see arise in me. So all of a sudden, I'm going to be very disorganized. I'm going to have a really hard time focusing and paying attention. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to be highly irritable. Depending on how irritable I get, I might even get angry, which even could turn into bouts of rage. I'm going to be highly anxious. I'm probably going to overwhelm others. I'm going to be moving around a lot because I'm taking on the challenge. I think of it as big energy. I want to, you know, I want to let the challenge know that I'm here. I can do something about it. I can take you on and go head to head. I may get defensive on a biological level too. My head may start hurting. My heart rate's going to increase. So what I just said, I actually named a handful of moods or emotional states. overwhelm, aggression, anger, right?
Which are often linked, I would imagine, to the behaviors.
To the behaviors.
That are challenging for parents.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. You see a lot of hyperactivity. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of scatteredness, inability to focus, mm-hmm. right?
You mentioned big energy.
Big energy.
Kind of difficult if that's what's happening in a group of kids or
absolutely
alone at home even.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's really important to recognize that these symptoms are arising as a result of the fight or flight response being triggered. Mm-hmm. They're not random. They're not coming out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It means that the child is perceiving that there's a challenge happening in front of them, or they're just thinking about a challenge. Mm-hmm. Either way, they're activating their nervous system.
And it happens very quickly.
Very quickly. Mm-hmm. And for all of us, it actually happens a couple of times during the day, mm-hmm. which is normal.
Yeah.
Which is normal.
Thank you for normalizing that. I'm sure all of us appreciate that because it does, you could see that just in the last 7 hours.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as parents, we get activated this way. It's not just our kiddos.
Yeah.
So if we perceive that our child is a challenge, mm-hmm. guess what? If we feel like we can do something about it, we're probably going to activate our own fight or flight response in relationship to the kiddo. Mm. So we may become anxious. We may become aggressive. We may become try to overwhelm the kid, not intentionally, but our energy may get really big
in response to child,
and vice versa, mm-hmm. and play off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is what sounds like in many books, the power struggle.
The power struggle.
Yeah.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Yes. The other side of that is the freeze, fall asleep response,
okay.
which it's really interesting. Our culture doesn't talk about that one very much. Mm. I think we just really like lots of energy or something.
Mm, yeah.
we tend to ignore this other half,
yeah.
which is just as important as the fight or flight response. So this goes back to if I perceive that I actually can't do something about the challenge. Mm-hmm. It's too much. It's too much. It's too big. Maybe it's been going on too long. I'm just exhausted. I can't deal with it anymore. It just feels like it's too much. That particular perception is then what activates my freeze, fall asleep response. And if my freeze, fall asleep response is activated, what someone will see in me is helplessness, tired, kind of lifeless. I'm probably going to be not very expressive. So just not a lot of emotional expression on my face. Maybe pretty hard to read how I'm feeling. A lot of depressive type symptoms, isolation, if you will, lethargic, lack of motivation. Internally, I'm going to feel probably a bit numb. I'm going to feel like there's a weight on me. Pretty hard to set boundaries. Just sort of the opposite of the fight or flight. I don't want to be big.
Yeah.
I want to be really small.
And Lisa, just to clarify, you're saying that this occurs when our nervous system, our brains feel like we can't do anything with the incoming right. stimuli.
Yep.
For example, a child, what would be maybe one example or two?
Oh, sure. So I actually see this a lot in classroom settings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So a child that may be just really sensitive mm-hmm. and is in a classroom mm-hmm. and everything just frankly feels like too much. Too much talking. Too many things on the walls. The lights are too bright. Mm-hmm. The teacher's talking too much. The kids are chatting. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. And the child will actually pull in and yeah. be very quiet, sort of hang out on the side.
Withdrawn. There's actually something that's going on with their brain at that time.
Yes, it's mm-hmm. they're actually trying to, I mean, this is the brilliance of it, because again, a lot of what I'm describing gets a really bad rap. Mm-hmm. That's bad. It's actually the design. So I'll keep coming back to saying, let's celebrate the design mm-hmm. rather than getting mad at it. One of the things that I think is also important for parents to get is that these are the easy kids. These are the easy kids. Okay. They don't ask for much. They don't express a lot.
Right.
They just kind of go with the flow. Teachers love them.
I think everything is fine.
Yes.
With them.
In fact, these are the kids that we rarely see in therapy. Mm-hmm. But they actually need support just as much as the kids that are in a fight-flight response. Mm-hmm. And so for parents really to look at, why isn't my kid expressive?
Mm-hmm. That's what you're looking for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking for is the what I call the flow in the nervous system.
Okay. The flow in the nervous
system. The flow in the nervous system. So to tie this together into the nervous system, when a baby is born, a baby's nervous system is not born regulated. So what that means is that when a child spends a lot of time not knowing what the heck they're experiencing, and they experience challenge often, and so they actually flip-flop often into fight-or-flight, freeze-fall-asleep responses, often.
As an infant.
As an infant. You probably saw this a lot with Grayson.
Yes.
Yes.
Still do.
Still do. Yeah, I mean, exactly. And mm-hmm. my little one also. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't yet learned how to regulate themselves.
Yes.
They don't know how yet to, when they get what I'm going to call dysregulated.
Dysregulated.
When they get dysregulated, let's say, in a fight or flight response, mm-hmm. they don't know how to come back to a state of regulation. Mm-hmm. If they get so overwhelmed, they start to shut down. They don't know how to come back. And a child learns how to come back off of, they attempt to pattern their nervous system off of their caregiver's nervous system. Mm-hmm. So this is where the role of the parent really comes in. Mm-hmm. So it is the, so parents, as you're listening, if you can recall holding your little one at one time. So your little one starts to cry. So they are dysregulated. If they're screaming at that point, they're in a fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we go over and we pick the baby up, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And we start to soothe the baby in some way, shape, or form. We either do the famous baby bounce, or we rock, or we sing, or we do the shh, right? All of these various soothing techniques to help the baby return to a state of regulation. Mm-hmm. And that cycle happens how many times do you think during a day?
As an infant?
As an infant.
Just constant.
Constant.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're sleeping.
Unless they're sleeping, mm-hmm. right. And it's the cycle of that happening over and over and over again mm-hmm. that starts to pattern the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And then the baby starts to go, oh, that felt really good. I want to come back to that state, the state where I was able to think clearly, think logically. I felt grounded. I could sense my body. I could sense my breath. I could use my words, whatever that may be, at whatever developmental stage. I can make eye contact. Ah, that feels really, really good. Mm. It's a place of being able to rest, if you will.
And it's so, and naturally, would they want to come back to that place?
Yes. Okay. And so as they grow up, they start mm-hmm. to seek ways mm. of returning back mm-hmm. to that place.
Mm. Okay.
And that's the patterning. So that's the flow. Mm-hmm. We are, so I'm going to break a huge myth, mm-hmm. okay?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
There's a huge, huge myth in our culture that says if we do enough work, if we, for example, practice yoga enough, practice meditation enough, practice mindfulness enough, that someday we won't have to deal with these states of dysregulation. That we'll be able to walk through the world in a regulated state all the time, 24 hours a day, completely centered.
Yes. I knew that was a myth.
Yeah. it goes completely against biology. Mm-hmm. Your nervous system was designed to pulse. Mm-hmm. So you're designed to walk through the world. You're designed to perceive a challenge. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to experience challenges. Mm-hmm. In fact, your brain looks for challenges
and stress
and stress
and stressors.
You actually there's actually a part of us that walks through the world attempting to stress ourselves out.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thought.
Why?
because that's how we grow. Because we walk into a challenge, and the moment we perceive a challenge, we immediately start to adapt. And we start to resource ourselves. And we have to expand and get creative. And that's what initiates our, how do we get through this? Which expands us and helps us grow.
Do most of us do that?
Oh, we do it all the time. And then once we, I call it make order out of chaos. Once we've discovered the order, once we've made sense of that challenge, then we're designed to come back to a moment of regulation. Not a week of regulation. Not even 5 days of regulation. A moment of regulation.
And a definition of regulation might be...
This is where you're activating those higher parts of the brain that we love. So you're thinking logically and clearly, and you can look at a situation and analyze
you're
it.
You're calm.
Sometimes. There's poised, I think would be a better way of saying it. You're present. You're more mindful. You're more aware. You're accessing higher centers of the brain. So you're designed to pulse. You're designed to go through dysregulation, fight or flight, freeze, fall asleep, back to a state of regulation. Dysregulation, back to a state of regulation. And it's the how quickly you're able to do that. When we talk about what is resiliency, that's what resiliency is.
How quickly you're able to come back to regulation from dysregulation.
Is resiliency. In fact...
That's why we would practice... yoga, meditation, mindfulness.
Absolutely. Okay. Because you're enhancing your ability to come back. In fact, the more you practice mindfulness, different types of mindfulness practices, the state of regulation becomes the state of choice, if you will. And you actually seek it out. You seek it out. You'll still get dysregulated.
Yeah.
But at least you'll seek it out more quickly to come back to a state of regulation. Do you have any questions, Erin, as I'm presenting this?
Well, I'm just very curious about now bringing it back to the kiddos.
Yeah.
And how they're learning how to do this.
Yeah.
Regulation, dysregulation, and how that really... affects them through their growing years.
Absolutely. Well, a child that doesn't know how to pulse very well is going to, you're probably going to call them moody. And so this is where the labels come in, back to the moods. Wow, they're sad all the time. They're depressed all the time. They're angry all the time. They're aggressive all the time.
All the time. So you're looking for
they'll be described as.
Yeah.
Right? If you're describing your child as that a lot of the time, your child's in a dysregulated state.
So some of the kids that you might see that come into your office, what are some of the kind of descriptions that parents bring in?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because the truth is that every quote-unquote symptom that ever walks through the door is a symptom of a dysregulated nervous system. And so it could be anything from, my kiddo is having a hard time sleeping. You can't sleep when you're dysregulated. My child's having a hard time concentrating at school. Yep, pretty hard to concentrate when you're dysregulated. My child is shutting down. You know, they're withdrawing, or they seem really, really sad, and they're not able to pull themselves out of it. My child is not... going to the bathroom well. They're holding a lot. My child is struggling with self-esteem issues, which is interesting to correlate that with nervous system regulation. But it's true, because when we are in a moment of regulation, and parents who are listening to this, think of this. If you have a moment where you're feeling like all is well and you feel really grounded and centered, you have confidence. You're not going to be struggling with confidence in those moments.
Right. That's one of the things that, isn't there.
Right. But if I'm dysregulated and I can't figure out how to get back to myself.
There's nothing to hold on to.
Another way I describe it is I've detached from myself. So how do I attach back to myself? Correct. I'm going to show symptoms of, I'm going to have confidence issues. I'm going to second guess myself. I'm probably going to have negative self-talk. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have a lot of trust in myself. So those are some examples.
Yeah, those are great examples. I'm curious, parents listening to this. So what would be your reframe, again, just to clarify,
mm-hmm. Yes.
of parents looking at a behavior, concerned, and now listening to this and, you know, you educating us about the nervous system.
Yep.
What might they say to themselves?
So when you are noticing that your child is having a hard time, first, take a step back and recognize that your child is having a hard time because they're perceiving a challenge. That's the first thing. The second thing is to just observe their behavior. Are they in a fight or flight response? Are they in a freeze, fall asleep response? And if so, see if you can detach from, oh my gosh, I have to do something about this behavior, mm-hmm. to, wow, my kid's dysregulated. My kid's having a hard time.
So just saying that to yourself.
Absolutely.
Can be a step in this.
Completely. My kiddo's dysregulated. And then as parents, our job isn't about solving the behavioral problem. It's how do I get my kid regulated becomes the question. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the focus. Mm-hmm. Because it's our job, it's my belief, it's our job as parents. It's not so much about behavior modification. It's how do I help my child do this pulsing thing? Mm-hmm. How do I help my child go through the world, take a challenge, mm-hmm. And actually use it, and then integrate and come back to a regulated state? Mm-hmm. It's not about me taking the challenges away from my child. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's not possible, parents. Mm-hmm. in fact, if you try to take all the challenges away from mm-hmm. the child, because there's a part of your child that wants challenges, they'll seek it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They'll start having a hard time with their friends or a hard time at school. Mm-hmm. But your child's always going to have some challenge to grapple with, just like you will.
And just like we will.
And just like we will as parents. Right. And we're supposed to have a challenge.
So that's the key, I think, Lisa, what you're talking about, is we are supposed to have these challenges.
Yes.
And you're normalizing that for us and for our children.
And you're supposed to get dysregulated.
And you're supposed to get dysregulated.
And you're supposed to have an interesting mm-hmm. mood or behavioral response.
Mm-hmm. That's our biology.
That's your biology. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, how do I recognize that and then come back to a regulated state? Mm-hmm. Right. And how do I help my child do it over and over and over and over and over again? Not just until they're two, mm-hmm. but until they're 18 years old, and even then so. Your job is to help your child learn how to pattern their nervous system in such a way, or not even pattern, how to work, how to manage themselves, how to integrate their states of dysregulation so that they can take on bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger challenges.
Mm-hmm. Which we as parents, as individuals and adults, have to learn.
Yes.
For ourselves.
Yes.
As well.
In fact, it's really interesting. If you look at leaders, for example, you look at people with a lot of influence or people that we would call really successful, look at the size of the challenges that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. They're huge. Mm-hmm. Absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. So here's a little motivation for you, for parents around this work, is if you can help your kiddo. It's not shutting their energy down. It's not making the behaviors go away. It's helping them learn how to work through them, helping them integrate and come back to states of regulation over and over and over again. You actually increase the odds that they can take on larger and larger and larger and larger challenges, which actually increases the odds that they are going to become leaders and they're going to be able to just handle more. Growth and yeah. evolution.
And this kind of token word now, resiliency, it would increase their
that's
resiliency.
At 100%.
And that's what parents are looking for in many different
yes.
ways and teachers and books. And
yes.
I feel a sense of relief hearing this perspective, hearing this reframe, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you might join us for part two.
Yes.
of this podcast series in really helping parents with what to do.
Yes.
Like the steps Because you talk about how do I get my kid regulated is one of the questions to ask. How do we do that?
How do you do that? Mm-hmm. I would love to, and I want to leave parents with a little nugget so that they don't walk away going, now I'm dysregulated because I don't know what to do.
So much information.
My little nugget that I'll leave you is that we cannot help a child get regulated if we ourselves are not regulated.
So that is obviously step one.
That is step one. So while you're waiting for part two to come out, parents, ask yourself, what does it take? What do I need to do to come back to myself? What is it? Do I need to just name my feelings out loud and just then let it go? Do I need to take some space? Do I need to just breathe? Do I need to go on a walk? Do I need to ask for help? Do I need to go to a yoga class? What do I need to do? And just start getting curious about what it takes for you to come back to attaching to yourself again, because it's really from that place where, parents, you are most empowered. You are most confident as parents. You yourself have the highest level of resiliency and can take on greater and greater parenting challenges. And from there, you have a lot of information, i.e. your intuition, on how to support your kiddos.
So really, it sounds like what you're saying is to take some time to do some self-exploration as parents. And I would imagine almost to build a toolbox of these things because we don't stay in a regulated state for too long.
And that's what we can go over in part two, or what are some specific things that parents can do for themselves and that kiddo that they can then do with their kiddos and put the picture together.
That sounds wonderful. So how can people get in touch with you, Lisa, if they want to learn more before part two, or just want to get to know more about you and what you do?
Yep. So the easiest way to contact me is at the Play Therapy Institute of Colorado. We are located in Boulder. Our phone number is 720-458-9597, or you can go to our website, which is playtherapycolorado.com, and people can track me down there.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. The wisdom is irreplaceable, and we look forward to part two.
Great. Thank you, Erin.
Thank you.